This week's episode of Buffy Virgin is brought to you by DennisComics.com. Dennis is a cartoonist who appears on almost every episode of Buffy Virgin. He raves about monsters and recommends great horror movies that no one else has ever heard of. His two short comics in the Halloween issue Devilthink that came out last year, Dennis's original graphic novel Amelia, which is really the thing I should mention first. It's very Lovecraft meets David Cronenberg, and I know other people have said that, but it's a wonderful, dark, and interesting read. Pinup art by Dennis St. John is also featured in issue 5 of Rich Tomasso's She-Wolf, a super interesting read. She-Wolf is beautiful, artsy, and strange. If, when you're listening to Buffy Virgin, if any of Dennis's recommendations for other films and stuff resonate with you at all, then you would absolutely love his comics. Dennis has a really well-developed horror sensibility that comes across in his comics. If you like horror stuff at all, you'd really enjoy his stuff. So get your horror comics fixed at DennisComics.com. That's Dennis with one N, D-E-N-I-S, and comics with an X because it's cool, C-O-M-I-X. In every generation, there is a virgin. He alone will watch the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness for the first time at least once a week. I am a Buffy virgin. Hey, welcome to another episode of Buffy Virgin. My name is Michael Poli. I'm the virgin. I've never seen any of Buffy except for all the way through season 2, episode 12. On the show today, we have some special guests. We have Dennis. He's a regular Dennis St. John, a horror comics cartoonist.
Hey, guys. Good to be back.
And then we have Mary, a special guest who was on last episode, season 2, episode 11, and is back on for another episode.
I'm so happy to be back, Michael.
Oh, it's great.
I can't believe it's
you.
Been a whole week.
I'm excited you came back. You know, you didn't have to.
No, I had so much fun. It was great.
All right, awesome. So, not joining us today, John and Travis, but we still have all their notes and musings. So, this will be interesting. This is a different sort of vibe here. We haven't had just a me, Dennis, and guest episode, so we'll see how this goes.
Time to really put our chemistry to the test.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a chem test. This will be on the test. This will be on the final.
We're going to find out if we're base or salty. I don't know.
So we'll start, like we start every episode, with a summary of the episode, which will get us in the mood to discuss Bad Eggs, Season 2, Episode 12.
Bad Eggs begins in Buffy's natural habitat, the mall. Buffy and Joyce are arguing about clothes and agreeing on food when Buffy spots a cowboy vamp staking out a victim. Buffy intervenes, smashing a pinball machine. The cowboy vamp introduces himself as Gorch and vamooses. Buffy doesn't pick up Joyce's moo-moo, and the mother-daughter drama is just beginning. At school, after a makeout session, Xander and Cordelia make it to class, just in time to get the sex leads the babies talk from Mr. Whitmore, and everyone is assigned a newborn egg to learn their lesson, including Buffy, who missed the class. That night, Buffy and Angel are supposed to go hunting for the Gorch brothers, but just end up necking instead. The Gorches just watch them. After getting home and going to bed, Buffy's egg, Eggbird, starts to crack. The creepy tendrils spread all over her. Talk about egg on her face. The next day, Buffy and Willow are both acting a little soft-boiled in the head, but Xander seems his usual over-easy-going self. Turns out Xander's hard-boiled as B. That's tough love. We also see someone has been getting ready for Easter, hiding eggs all around the school. Mr. Whitmore is apparently missing. Never good news for a Sunnydale teacher. And Xander and Cordelia go looking in the closets for him. Yeah, that's what they're doing in the closet. But where is Mr. Whitmore? He's feeding security guards to a hole in the basement. After another night of hunting with Angel, Buffy comes home to find Eggbert coming out of his shell. And he's ugly. Parenting isn't all it's cracked up to be. This little facehugger goes for our Slayer. But like going from the frying pan and into the fire, Eggbert wasn't prepared for the Slayer. Buffy quickly calls Willow to warn her about her egg. But Willow says everything is chill. Oh no! Willow's been scrambled. The phone call wakes up Joyce, who sees Buffy dressed to kill in the middle of the night, and promptly grounds her. The next day at school, Xander tries to make a little snack out of his egg and finds a boiled baby body snatcher instead. Buffy, Xander, Willow, and Cordelia, with a tentacle or two popping out of her fashionable teddy bear backpack, go to the science lab to dissect Buffy's poached prey. When Willow and Cordelia, like a couple of eggs Benedicts, betray Xander and Buffy, somehow manage to knock them both out. Buffy comes too, a little shell-shocked, but manages to smash her eggs left for them. Meanwhile, Joyce is at the school, and before she can ground Buffy again, Giles eggs her. Now everyone but Buffy and Xander are slaves to the Mother Bazaar, the egg-laying monster in the basement. Buffy and Xander know they need to know more, but being, let's call them the least academically inclined members of the Scooby Gang, don't know where to begin. Luckily, before being possessed, Giles left a book open to the exact right page. That, and seeing Jonathan get egged right in front of them, leads them, like foxes, straight to the hen house. Just then, the Gorge brothers show up. What an extraordinary coincidence. So Buffy has to face two vampires, an army of zombies, and the Mother Bazaar, while Xander does his best to help, managing to punch his girlfriend. One Gorge gets the Sarlacc pick treatment, and the Bazaar tries it again on Buffy, but the yoke's on the Bazaar. Buffy emerges triumphant and covered in demon blood. The remaining omelets die without their big mama. The surviving Gorge turns chicken and runs away, and everything is back to normal. Except Buffy is now in even more trouble with Joyce. But all the strong-arm parenting in the world can't stop a teenage slayer from making out with her vampire boyfriend.
Really overwhelming, with overwhelmed by the amount of egg puns that you wrote, Dennis. The way that this show works, we're going to go through weird noticings, questions, themes, predictions. There'll be a kill count and recommendations. Predictions can be a little weird because John isn't here, so I'll have to run my own predictions and we'll see how this goes. So starting out here, I have some of John's predictions, or rather John's noticings. John says, does Buffy know he's a vampire because of his cowboy fashion choices or because she is honing? I think
I was going to immediately answer that he doesn't have a reflection in the mirror and Buffy sees that. So that's really obvious. So John didn't pay enough attention. And here is my anti-John rant about him not understanding visual storytelling. Because I love John. But so he said something to me one time, and this was like 12 years ago, but he was reading one of my Spider-Man comics. And he was like, are you supposed to look at the panels that don't have dialogue? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, what, you're supposed to like stare at them and reflect on them? And like, I had a big thing in my head about what I should have said and explaining like comics to him and stuff. But I don't know what I probably was just like, fuck you, John. But the reason I still remember this is like, because that was like 12 years ago. And since then, I've gone to like comic book school and stuff. And I always think like, no matter how good I get at visual storytelling, there's always going to be people who are like smart people who like understand other understand movies and stuff, who are just not going to be able to read my comics no matter what I do. And it makes me like, I think about it and it makes me sad. And John making this comment reminded me of that. It was like, he's just going to not notice visual storytelling. Fine. It has to be in dialogue.
Wow. Great callback to like a weird old comic diss.
Never forget.
I feel like I've heard that seeing, you ever see like a sculpture in a museum and you hear people say, like, kind of like, are you supposed to see the whole thing? Like walk around it, you know, like just like this, you know, there's some visual mediums that are just, they don't come with a full educational package to explain how they work.
I'd say, To teach people about reading comics right now, when there's a silent panel of a comic, you don't have to stare at it and reflect on its deeper meaning. You just have to look at it for a second, and it contributes to the pacing of the comic and pay attention to the action that's happening in the comic. You don't have to like stare at it like it's a framed piece of art. Just like acknowledge that it exists and don't jump to the dialogue page. That's all I'm saying.
So next observation here is Dennis. Joyce telling Buffy she's not old enough for the unseen outfit seems a little too late after some of the outfits Buffy's been wearing this season, especially last episode.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I know we usually don't comment on like Buffy's like fashion or something, and a lot of that is like we're trying to not be a creepy podcast. But like she was wearing some sexy outfits last episode, right? She was wearing like a full like see-through top at one point that I was like, is she going to wear that to school? Wow, she's wearing it to school.
And she wears like the dark, dark like lipstick. Like she's always dressing for like 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're always dressing like she's going to the Bronx.
Yeah, like I've only ever worn some of the even remotely fancy close to Buffy outfits like twice in my life. You know, and they were both times were a mistake. So, yeah, Yeah. I don't know how her mom let her go to the mall like that. I think that is just, that's the show. I don't know. I guess kids dress like that. I don't remember.
Mary, did you watch the show when you were in high school? Were you
no,
a kid?
No, not yeah.
So you
was,
you...
speaking of comic books, I was knee deep into Tank Girl at that time.
Nice. So that's a good, think, that is a really good high school
yeah,
choice.
Yeah, that was, it shaped me in so many ways. So I read the comic books and then I got into the movie. So I think I was Tank Girl 100% every weekend. That and Strictly Ballroom, which I don't know if you've seen that, but it's fine.
I have.
Yeah. That was like, I would rent both of those from the local Crazy Mike's.
That's a great combo. That's like yeah. two very different parts of your personality. Like,
yeah, well, I'm a complex individual.
Yeah.
Both movies have a lot of like frenetic movement.
Yeah. All about, yeah, all true.
And crazy visual storytelling. Crazy yeah. visuals.
Wonderful, crazy visual storytelling. Yeah, no, I never watched Buffy. I was not influenced by that fashion in high school.
I always loved Tank Girl.
I did have combat boots that were glittery and yellow. And I had a shaved head.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that did was like the big...
One little piece sprout?
Yeah, I did do that every once in a while.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. No, I went all in. I don't do things like just a little bit interested.
Yeah, I was curious like what Tank Girl lifestyle meant, but yeah, bald, like shaved head says it all.
Shaved
Were you trying to date a kangaroo?
Not to my knowledge, no. I think that I was out of dating range mostly during those years. I'm not sure why, but no one ever asked.
So the reason I asked about the Buffy stuff, because when you were watching Buffy, were you already a mom? So were you already watching this as a mom? So you're like clued into what Joyce should be doing and or is doing right or wrong?
Yeah, no, this is good because I wasn't a mom when I first started watching Buffy. I was, you know, like 20 something. I mean, I became a mom at 25, so I wasn't far from it. But I was an adult. It's actually interesting. Like, it was interesting to rewatch this one and Ted because of my mom instincts kicking in. And Joyce surprises me. Like I say more often, I feel like Joyce is already in a losing battle with her daughter, but you can't have such a big secret from your parent and have a successful parent-child relationship. Like Joyce is out of the loop and in a big way.
Yeah. And these are two Joyce heavy episodes. They've joined us on.
Yeah. Well, gotta love the mom episodes. Yeah.
And then this one goes, you know, deeper to being about moms because everybody's raising an egg, right?
Ain't that true? Yeah.
I mean, there's a reversal on it, but same time.
Yeah.
John points out, fake pinball game, Meteor. Okay, yep. No, it's real pinball. Cool. Yep, pinball sighting in the wild. I don't know why we do these. Is it because it's just like a weird cultural thing, right?
And I think, like, most of the time when pinball is on a show, the pinball does get smashed, right? Which happens this episode. The thing that bothered me is like the victim girl being like, I'm about to beat my high score. It's like, you've been playing the game for like less than a minute. Like, you must be terrible at pinball.
That probably was her high score. She was being honest.
Speaking of problems with shooting pinball, I was involved in a conversation, but briefly, about how difficult it is to live stream pinball because nobody knows like what to show for pinball. Like, pinball is probably just not interesting to stream like other forms of video games and stuff. It's like, what do you show? And that's
what you gotta do is have one camera that's showing the full field and then have like one dedicated guy trying to like follow the ball and have like a guy live mixing it. So you need three people.
That'd
be cool. Yeah. Cool. As opposed to just a video game where there's like the camera follows all the action anyway. Great.
Yeah. I find pinball very soothing. It's like meditative.
So, Dennis, you said Gorch is fun to say.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it when I was doing the recording. Gorch.
And then John says, the cut to teacher saying S-E-X, does this imply that Xander and Cordelia are actually doing it or just want to?
I think just want to. Yeah. I don't think they're doing it.
I don't think they've been given a real opportunity.
Yeah, because they apparently can only get together in closets in school. They don't go out to town.
Xander's not a pro, so I don't really think he can... I don't know. I'm not gonna finish that sentence. I'm sorry.
But Cordelia tells that story, that funny story about, like, I have a friend that, you know, she's talking about having sex in a car or whatever. Like, I think she's had sex before. It's just Xander is kind of like not in this. Well, relationship.
The fact that she says like a real sex story, and then he's like, "What about bad breath?" Like,
yeah, right? No.
Yeah, he's very much like a fifth grader.
Yeah, 100%. No. He's barely accepted the fact that he's making out with Cordelia. He doesn't know if that's okay.
He must have a terrible home life because the things he says to her are so mean.
Yeah.
They're both such terrible people in their, like, makeout scenes.
It's not really working out for them. I wouldn't call it, like, a supporting relationship.
Nah, probably not healthy.
Yeah.
And then, Dennis, you say, Willow putting the pieces together of Xander and Cordelia is good silent acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in that scene, her, like, back and forth looks very, very charming acting.
And then John says, watching the show as an adult means hating Xander.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, this...
Really? We do a lot of Xander bashing on this show.
Yeah?
I think there's Xander's some strong empathy.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't know a Xander? Like, he's just struggling to make good choices and be a human being and fit in. He happens to have, like, the two coolest girls in school as his friends, but he can't even figure that out. So he ends up with Cordelia. Xander struggles in, like, I could talk about this for, like, 20 minutes. I'm Team Xander.
I mean, I think,
don't,
you know,
don't
we all kind
Xander
of...
around me.
I think we all kind of identify with a little bit because he's so foolish. But he's often so dumb, it's painful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
And then I don't like his relationship with Cordelia because it's this, to me, it's a totally fictitious style of relationship. This, like, relationship where both people hate each other, but then they end up in these situations and, like, the hate is really this love underneath and, like, they don't know how to express it or that's the way it gets expressed. Like, it's really painful to watch, and I haven't had those style relationships ever and I don't believe they exist. So, like, it just feels so TV.
Yeah, well, it's very exaggerated for sure. But that whole concept of, like, a boy in high school being awkward and not knowing how they got themselves in that situation is pretty classic.
Oh, yeah. That stuff, for sure. But I think I'm more on the Ben Stiller camp of awkwardness, where it's like, gosh, I'm so surprised this has happened. I don't know what to do. And then, like, some sexually, you know, something strange, like, I don't understand my own body or how to act stuff versus, like, the straight up anger that you see from Xander.
Yeah. No, this is right. He gets very angry. Yeah. Well, and I think that's his home stuff, which we only ever see, like, little glimpses of. So
for
far.
Now, for
really,
now.
Well, I can't remember what happens, but.
Whatever happens in the future is a mystery.
Yeah. It's like, I can't even remember watching it 50 times. I don't know what happened, Michael.
Travis says, this is one of the episodes where Buffy speak really comes in its own. It's almost Gilmore-esque when Buffy and Joyce are at the mall talking about clothes and responsibility. Very Travis thing to say, comparing to Gilmore Girls.
Gilmore Girls, I feel like, great. Just since Buffy came out before Gilmore Girls, it's a little weird to call the dialogue Gilmore-esque, but it's definitely what Travis calls it. I don't know.
But I agree.
Some good dialogue in this episode.
But I agree. Like, there's this funny, weird cadence, like, playful cadence of this style of dialogue that feels like a thing that I've seen obviously, since I've seen Joss Whedon's Avengers, right? Since, like, the Avengers has this kind of playful cadence in a lot of scenes, too, where it's like the dialogue is kind of absurdly playful. But I enjoy that, but it doesn't... yeah, it just like it creates endearing characters who are like too smart for whatever their situations are. Travis points out also, we see more of Angel and Buffy's relationship than we have before. Absolutely. Yours. I really enjoyed that, those scenes. Yeah. In particular, I love how the end of this episode, but we'll get to that. And then Travis says a point, I assume from the commentary, a lot of the nighttime bedroom scenes were shot during the daytime and they had a blue filter added in post-production.
Yeah.
Man, that's funny. I'm not allowed to watch any of the commentary tracks on these because they talk about
because there's potential spoilers.
But
what's some good Buffy? I wrote down a couple good Buffy or dialogue this episode. Xander talking about raising the egg in a good Christian environment, and Willow goes, "But my egg is Jewish." And it's an egg. It doesn't emote. It's really funny. And there's a couple others.
Those are all good. Yeah.
So
I don't remember being that witty about our like take care of a baby day at high school.
I feel like I think we were a little bit witty in school. And I say that only because I have this kind of sad memory of hanging out with a friend of mine, Trevor Lowe, who, you know, he passed away in high school. But like, I remember hanging out with Trevor and, you know, John. And Trevor saying, "You guys talk like the movies," and it being like a weird moment when we're driving around, and like John and I are probably just on top of each other talking about what the meaning of love is and how to love, and like no experience whatsoever, just like probably trying to interpret Richard Linklater movies into like solutions.
Trevor was probably predicting, he had probably, you know, foresaw, write a story about the day you die and it would revive you, and it was like, I'm hearing this dialogue again.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway.
That is talking like the movies. I don't remember anything I said in high school. High school was like, I was kind of a dope, Michael.
We spent a lot of time drinking coffee and pretending like we lived in San Francisco or whatever.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I think we definitely, high school was our most pretentious time period.
Yeah, we definitely sobered up. I mean, like as intellectuals since high school. It was pretty bad. Really?
No, we were definitely like, we were all reading like Aedox Huxley and like, you know.
And writing short fiction, writing our own stories and commitments to the time period we lived in.
Oh my, like, I wrote like a 300 page play about cannibalism called Dinner for a Friend.
It's a beautiful play. It's a totally rewriting of The Last Supper.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was, and I gave 12 characters monologues. Like, I mean, I'm proud that I wrote that just because I got so many pages of bad fiction out there in high school.
Doesn't sound like bad fiction, Dennis.
I also wrote it on a typewriter.
Gosh, I love typewriters.
See, in another time period, we'd all be Kindle Unlimited authors right at this point.
Yeah, right? On our way. Well, not me, probably.
Well, we'll be
I don't know. Your Tank Girl fanfic that you would be producing.
Yeah. I'm working on some Nicolas Cage fanfic as we speak.
I feel like there's there's room for a Tank Girl Strictly Ballroom scene.
As long as Nicolas Cage starred in it, yes. That's an ongoing joke at work, is that I'm very into Nicolas Cage right now.
He should be
on Buffy. That would have been amazing. But would he have been a good guy or a vampire?
Oh, he would have definitely been a vampire.
But he could have been a good vampire.
He could have been a vampire like masquerading like he has a soul, but he's just like, he can't hold his insanity in. And they're like,
I'd like to see Nicolas Cage either as Angel, which would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Totally see him doing that.
I could totally see him as Giles.
Or as Spike. I think he'd be great as Spike. Like, really crazy eyes the whole time.
I hate Spike.
You know, just so clearing much. The, like, you know, eating the scenery, you know, all that.
Yeah.
No, it's good. I like that. That could be good fan fiction. Sorry, I got off. Somebody, people say fan fiction, and then I go into a whole nother direction of where my life is leading me.
So, Dennis, you say the next thing here. Is the closet a reference to season one? Sorry, there's a Travis observation here. Cordelia is right, but also wrong with the whole closet thing. And then Dennis, you said, is the closet a reference to season one? Mantis episode, first episode, puppet episode. Bodies haven't fallen out of closets and lockers as much this season. Right. So,
yeah, it used to be a recurring thing, right? And like Cordelia was often the one opening the closet or whatever and getting a body dumped on her.
Right. And that's a weird excuse for her to go make out with Xander. But yeah, it's a funny reference to, I think, totally season one.
Yeah, it sounds like a reference. Yeah.
But it's just a fun internal reference to, like, kind of, just like what seems like a classic horror trope of things falling out of closets, but is literally true of this show.
Yeah, it's happened in their lives. In Sunnydale. Sunnyside up, Sunnydale.
Sunnyside up.
Then I wish Travis was here for this observation, because he says, an autopsy is for people, a necropsy is for animals or non-humans, which is the first clue that alien autopsy is not legit. Because it would be alien necropsy.
Thank you, Dr. Frog, Dr. Travis Frog.
And then Dennis, you're saying Egbert, pretty much a face hugger design.
Yeah, once it hatches, pretty much a face hugger. And I think it's cool. You know, it's so rare that this show does, I guess, the Bezors or whatever they're called, are demons. But it's so rare for them to not be humanoids, you know? And we episode like the unhatched version, the hatched version, and then the mom. And I think they all look pretty gross.
Super gross.
They got like a nice pinkiness to them.
I don't like them. I don't like them at all.
Maybe that's why I do like them.
Ugh.
If you know, if latex and stuff can give somebody like the heebie-jeebies, then like that's good artistry.
Yeah, well, they did it, man. Ugh.
So I assume your recommendation will be Aliens, right? Like
no, because everybody's seen Aliens. I'm actually really pumped about my. I have three recommendations.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, everybody should see Alien and Aliens, but like, I assume that the world knows about them.
And then you have this amazing. Like, we should totally do this as a trailer for, like, this episode. You have this amazing tagline for a movie, which is, do you want to do the tagline? Or I'll do it. A villain playing a game of Easter egg hunt for keeps. So right on.
Yeah, just, I like seeing the, you know, the egg in the library.
Oh, yeah, it's like hiding behind a book, and Giles puts a book back. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I hated this episode. Oh,
I also had so very gross. Few observations about this episode because it just like it just gets so crazy and silly.
So yeah, gross. And,
it just feels like a monster throwaway monster of the week thing. But then they have good. They have a good creature. But
yeah,
it's still
a good creature. Well, you know, have you ever like? Of course, you have. Like, you lift up a brick that's been in your backyard forever. And there's like an ant craziness and they're all collecting the eggs all of a sudden because you lifted up their brick and they're freaking out. That is how I feel about this episode. Like, it's just little teeny nasty eggs everywhere that are just only there to ruin your day.
Right. Like, you picked up a book and there was a Buffy episode underneath the book and you're like,
yes. Just.
And then, Dennis, you're saying, Joyce sees some supernatural books. Giles' response, a hobby of mine, having nothing to do with Buffy in any way. Which is good Buffy dialogue that you didn't bring up.
Yeah, just great dialogue.
But it's also a good joke fact that, like, Joyce is always clueless, which I predict, and I have predicted, I believe, already, can't last. Anyway,
yeah, I think you've predicted... you've predicted contradictory things, right? So... No matter what, you'll be okay. You said she'll only know on her deathbed.
Yes. Right. She can't last. But also, like, literally, she has to learn. She has to know at some point.
I think she already knows. I think she's in denial.
Yeah.
But that's, like, in the never written down world. I just think in Joyce, the real person, she kind of knows. Because obviously she's sort of real, right? All fiction's sort of real. She's out there somewhere.
So
I've always had a hard time with fiction and nonfiction. Sorry if that got
But
weird.
Yeah, like yeah, there's a lot of thing like a lot of things, right, that a mom knows but doesn't acknowledge. Right.
Right. You're like, okay, like, this is happening, but I'm just gonna let you get through it.
Yeah.
So John says 90s fashion conspires against the creatures.
Yes.
It's true. There's a lot of, it's hard to hide when you've got a lot of skin exposed.
It is hard, and it's hard to run. That's what I have found. Head to toe clothing.
But
no
this
midriff.
I'm so happy you observed this, Dennis, this next one, because like I felt this when I watched it, but I couldn't articulate it. Cordelia asks African-American classmate if her hair is real. That seems like a faux pas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially, like, that is not a character we've met. Like, it's just this, like, little gag about her leaving, right? But it was like, I don't think that's cool, Cordelia.
That's pretty classic 90s, though.
Well, it's good business to get out of a scene, but it's like, I'm going to do something quasi-racist and get out of the scene. Like, it's an African-American woman with straight hair, which is crazy because that's not natural for an African-American woman. So, but she's wearing it so well, like, and maybe would feel that's a compliment. And that's where it's like, I don't know how black Cordelia is that she can just like jump into that world because we've never seen her with this person. It's crazy.
Cordelia does that in every world though. She just jumps in. I mean, that's how
true.
She's at all in the library ever hanging out with Xander and his crew.
Yeah, or like meeting cops and immediately being like, can you take care of my parking ticket?
Yeah, she's just super egotistical. There's nothing that she can't get into.
But Mary, I love what you just said, Xander and his crew, which by the way is a totally different show that I'm totally into.
Xander and his crew.
Well, I think you just call it Xander Squad. And it's just like, instead of, you know, it's all of Xander's home problems and then like, he's trying to square with Cordelia and this issue, and then like there's this weird Buffy thing happening.
Yeah, it's all just from his point of view, but it's the same events.
Maybe that's how I see it, because I really do adore Xander. I follow the actor on Instagram. He's like one of my favorite people. It's great.
He's going through he's going through better times now.
He's been through
rehab
and
everything.
He's been through some SHIT, and I'm following every minute of it on the internet.
Rehab? What happened?
He definitely went through, I think he's in AA actually, but he definitely went through a period where every couple months he would be in the news, like the Buffy news, for like, at another con, he trashed a hotel room. One was like, he was found naked and covered in his own feces,
That's not good.
Like in a hallway, and I was like, man, that is rough.
That is rough. But he's great, and he talks about having depression, and he's really honest, and he's connecting with fans all over. I think he's a really good guy. I'm into
Nikki
it.
Nikki B.
Yeah, love that guy.
Yeah,
I'm a Xander fan.
I could tell it was a big deal, because Travis was very excited to show me a trailer that he was in for like some Bigfoot movie, and I was like, cool, I expected he would still be working. I don't know why this is so shocking, but I guess if you follow him, it's kind of been a sad story.
I think
story.
He's had some years of not working. No, actually, Xander's like huge for me in like in the Buffyverse. I think I've always related to, like, I always had male friends in high school, and I always spent more time with the dudes. I feel like Xander, I identified with him. He's like a guy you trust. Is a guy you would say, hey man, take me to prom. I don't have a date. Like Xander's,
and he'd be like, Xander's okay, all right. First of all, get in line. There's at least three women that have looked at me in the last month that I might take to prom if they say yes, if their boyfriends die.
If we even survive prom.
If we survive prom, that would be classic Xander, and I would love that. Yeah.
Okay, and then Travis has a note here to remind us. A bezoar is also a medical term for concretion in the stomach or for a mass of foreign objects in the stomach. Like commonly, which is commonly hair or another indigestible thing that you would eat slowly over time. I don't know how that fits into the metaphor of the bezoar.
In Harry Potter, it's supposed to save the day if you've gotten a hold of some nasty poison.
No. So. I was going to say that Travis's doctor knowledge is on point this episode.
I feel like it's been missing. Most of the time, he's like, I don't know, that's not real. And now it's like, snap, snap, snap. I think every podcast needs a doctor on staff.
Like, most certainly. Yeah. Most certainly.
I think it's like a huge layup. Like, it's a huge win for our podcast. We should totally say, like, with Buffy Virgin MD. If you're like, huh? What's that? It's like, there's a medical doctor on the show.
That could be a spin-off podcast.
Yeah. After Buffy Virgin ends, we start it up again.
MD Buffy. Virgin MD.
That would be like the Angel version of this, where Travis just watches Angel and talks about it. That would be Buffy Virgin MD. Yes.
What I want to do once Angel starts is, instead of us talking about it, just like cut to like 5 minutes of like Travis trying to summarize that Angel episode or something.
I want all his observations on Angel. I also would like to watch Angel, since he's like, that's his comfort show. It's his go-to show. He's always talking about it. But then, because of the Buffy Virgin thing, he doesn't let me know anything that's happening. So it's this huge fucking mystery that he's had with Angel.
I've never watched Angel.
Apparently it's better than Buffy, according to a lot of people.
Yeah, my lunchmates at work today could not believe I hadn't seen it.
I think Angel is fine, but it's no Buffy.
But Angel Virgin as a show title is pretty gross. Like, I don't know what's going on with that.
No, you could get the wrong crowd.
I mean, it sounds like every episode is going to start with a Bible passage. It really does.
Yeah. And like arguments about like angel genitalia. Like,
oh no.
We read 200 pages of Bible fan fictions. You didn't have to. Angel Virgin.
Angel Virgin.
Staying pure.
Oh my
For gosh. The lore.
So Dennis, you're saying here, what an incredible coincidence that the Bezoar eggs actually look like chicken eggs.
Yeah, I read that one.
Yep.
I think that makes me hate them more. But you know what? Like, ant eggs look a little bit like, I don't know, I've never looked under one in a microscope, but ant eggs look like a chicken egg. It's just this little teeny weeny nasty thing you find under the bricks. They're and all then carrying Dennis, one, trying to save it. It's exactly like this episode.
And then Dennis,
this was a traumatic moment for you when you saw this under a brick.
Yeah, it literally happened to me 3 times this weekend.
You shouldn't work out outside by yourself. It's too dangerous.
I guess not. No. So, and I can't remember. Let me think about it. Hold on. The teacher, what was his deal? I don't remember. The sex ed teacher who gave everybody these alien eggs. Was he the alien? Was he the...
He was not the alien, but he was one of the possessed. So he had probably been egged possessed early forever. On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why his motives are so confusing and mixed, because he's also wants to teach the kids, but also mainly wants to spread the, you know, the.
Yeah. The well, that's a question I have for a different section about like how do they, we can get to later, but like, how does the possession work? Like, what's the mechanics inside your brain?
This possession is so complicated and stupid. It's like, if we walk through it, it's like, you just say Hellmouth at the end, because like, there's no other reason that this plan works into. I mean, really the eggs should just be like, in the grocery store, right? You should be getting these eggs. Then, like, there's always one or two you don't finish.
Oh, I hate it. Listen, so here's what I don't understand. This is important. So that first night, they've got the stupid egg. And, of course, because they're so dedicated to the assignment, they put these eggs on their bedside tables.
Yeah, instead of in the fridge.
Right. And, like... Two things. Who in high school actually had a bedside table? I didn't.
Okay, I
don't. I don't remember.
That seems way too fancy for high school. Number two, the egg kind of taps out, and it gets its little thing in, and it taps them on the head, and none of them sleep well that night. But then it goes back in the egg.
Yeah, and the egg apparently
later.
The egg can apparently heal itself because there's not cracks, right? But yeah, I thought also the tendrils on the face is totally gross.
It's super gross. And they never explained that. I was like, well, obviously he could have gotten out of his egg the night before and latched on to Buffy, but he didn't.
Maybe it's a two-part possession that needs to happen. Like, the first night makes the host ready, and the second night is the night that it receives. Yeah.
No, that's fitting with the Buffy universe.
I'll no, that makes sense because like the Willow sense. Is super skeptical of Buffy having already kind of experienced, I assume, the initial possession, right? Mm-hmm. Unless mm-hmm. it happens. Yeah, yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Buffy's like, this thing I saw, blah, 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 you know, attack me or whatever. And then Willow's like, probably just yours.
Yeah, just you've got to mess up egg because you're the
Slayer.
The vampire Slayer. Yeah. Someone's messing with you.
Yeah, they think it's the Gorches, who are like the dumbest cowboy vampires we've met. Like the idea that they would have some sort of like plan that involves possession.
They I guess we don't know how dumb they are. Those guys were named after a real movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My good friend Navita, who, by the way, should probably be on this podcast because she is an expert, told me all about it at lunch.
All right. Yeah, please refer us. We would love to have these experts on the show.
At lunch today, when I told her I hadn't seen Angel, I thought she was going to unfriend me from the Facebook.
It sounds like she's going to unfriend you in real life.
I hope not. She's the best. Anyway, I can't find it. I wrote it down. I tried to collect that information to share for you guys, but I can't because I don't pay attention to detail.
I like your style.
Thank you. I'm going to let you continue.
So, Dennis, you said, who fell in the pit better, Gorch or Boba Fett? That's a good one.
That's great.
And then you say, good thing all the clues were left right there for Buffy and Xander. They really seem lost as to what to do next.
Yeah, once they get, once they break out of the closet and stuff, there's a moment where they like generally like don't know how to move the characters don't know how to move the plot forward for a second. They're like, somebody usually tells us something at this point. We can't rely on Willow and Giles.
That is really funny.
I remember that. They do kind of just stand in the closet for a minute. Do you think for half a second they were like, maybe it would be better if we just stayed here? Because that's me 100%. It's like, don't fight, hide in the closet.
I think they're too far into the world of fighting monsters at that point in their life.
Yeah, that's true.
They're not Willow and Cord in School Hard, hiding in the closet.
Yeah.
And then, Dennis, you said, Buffy rising from the pit, covered in slime, is classic Whedon superheroine hero imagery.
Yeah, I don't know where he gets it from, but it's definitely like, I can picture Buffy doing that a bunch of times, and it's like, River does that at the end of Firefly or Serenity, right? And maybe it's like from Aliens? Maybe like Ripley does that right when once the Queen gets through the airlock? But it's just like, I don't know, it's just like his go-to like image, woman crawling out of pit covered in slime.
Does it I mean, it sounds like that would be a good prediction for me to make, is that someone was going to rise from slime again. That's a thing. But yeah, that's interesting that's a thing. I mean, it's super gross and interesting as an image, so it's like a birthing image or resurrection image.
Yeah, it's total resurrection image. It's a... Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey.
Totally. Journey classic, from hell. Classic journey. All right, so we're moving on here to questions. We have a ton of these. We have so much podcast. Oh my gosh. So John asked, did you do the egg experiment when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Where you took care of an egg? And I don't remember doing this experiment.
I did the egg drop experiment.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. That was great. I put mine in Jell-O.
Nice.
Didn't work.
I don't remember what I put mine in, but I remember dropping it off. I remember being upset that I wasn't allowed to actually be on the roof to drop it off. Like, that was my whole thing. I wanted to.
That was a bummer.
I did a team builder that did the egg drop off like a half ladder onto like a tennis court.
Yeah, I vividly remember fifth grade Prescott School, our teacher throwing them off the roof, and I put mine in some weird gelatin and it splatted everywhere.
That sounds like so much fun.
It was good.
It would have been great to have been the one on the roof dropping it.
I know. I bet he had fun, Mr. Christensen. But I also did the egg drop. The egg carrying. But I don't know if it was a real egg. I don't remember what it was. And I remember we did not take those suckers home.
I remember people doing fake baby, like a baby doll that they did carry around.
But yeah, I remember the baby doll, and I remember it would cry. It would like cry randomly, and you had to like the kids had to get to it in a certain amount of time or whatever, and it being really irritating, like on the bus, like yeah, to hearing.
We did not have that technology at my high school. Hey, fun fact, by the way, my high school was called Hellgate High School. That is its actual name.
Whoa.
And we often got teased for being where Buffy really should have started. We might be in real hell now.
That is really literal.
You can Google it, but it is in fact Hellgate High School, real high school.
How crazy.
Go nice.
Why was it called Hellgate?
So Montana. And I believe I don't want to anger any listeners that might be Montana knowledgeable. But
hey, we excuse you, Mary. Don't worry about it. You're totally excused. You can say anything. Clark
came through Hellgate Canyon, which was just a canyon at the time. And they said, my God, it looks like we're walking into the gates of hell because the rocks are very red and fiery. And there's another version, I think, where there's a lot of there was like a battle and there's like dead people. Anyway, either way they say it looks like the gates of hell. So, you know, there's like a Hellgate Conoco and a Hellgate 7-Eleven and a Hellgate High School.
Wow. That's so intense.
It was great.
I've never heard of Hellgate. I've heard of there's the Hell Creek formation, right? Which is where some dinosaur bones are.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah. We're really into hell in Montana.
Yeah.
There should be a Buffy, like a whole branch of Buffy films.
Good. I feel like Montana Buffy would be like a lot rougher than Southern California Buffy.
It would be rough and tough.
Yeah, I just Googled it. You got like a weird knight as your Hellgate mascot. Knights.
Yep, which is weird because your name's Hellgate. I feel like you could probably get fun with that.
You're like the one school that could probably get away with being like the demons or something.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And there was a lot of huge Buffy fans that came out of that high school, for sure. Nice. Who is it? The drama teacher now is a really good friend of mine, and he's waist deep in Buffy love.
Nice. Does he make the kids put on Buffy plays?
I think he actually has, to be honest with you. Yeah. Awesome. I know there's been at least, you know, like in the drama 3 class, I think he's gone that route. Definitely. I'll ask him.
Yeah, we got to get a hold of some of those recordings and play them when it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Well, we want to get the good clips, the good quotes that we want to say, and then get a high school student saying them.
Oh, yeah.
If they get if they did the musical, we could get when we get to that, if we get to that far, we could, instead of playing the music from the show, just play the music from these high school
That's what he did. He did the musical. That's what I'm remembering. Yeah. He did the whole Buffy musical 2 years ago for like the senior drama performance. I wonder if he has video. I'm going to ask. It was really good. But it was at Hellgate High School.
Man, that's great.
Yeah, thanks. No, please exploit that relationship and let's get those clips. We need them.
Okay. You should have him on your podcast. He's fantastic.
It'll be weird to follow all of the Hellgate kids, see what happens. People that really grew up in the Buffyverse.
Yeah, it feels true. Feels true. It's an old high school, too. It could totally have been the Hellmouth. Some of our teachers were real weird, too.
So moving on, next question here. Travis sorry, asks.
I'm sorry. I just keep going off point. I'm sorry.
I'm really enjoying it, Mary. I just don't know. I don't know where it's going.
It's never going anywhere. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Yeah. I think like there's an energy that Travis has that prevents too many tangents from happening. Like you see him getting more and more impatient. And then
he wraps it up really quick.
I think it's just like, can we talk about the pacing? What about the box? Yeah. Moves it on, you know?
He keeps us on track. Whereas when I'm listening to the podcast, because of course I listen to our own podcast, like it's always our tangents that I like the best. Where I'm like,
well, this is true. When you guys all talked about your the fight that didn't happen or did happen when you were in high school, and one of you had moved away. and that you were having a lot of big feelings and that you sent some emails that you regret. I don't remember the specifics.
Yeah, yeah, Dennis remembers what I'm talking about. Dennis remembers
okay.
that.
Yep. Yeah,
I was,
yeah,
that I was the legit. One that moved away.
Like, I felt moved, Dennis. I was like, yeah, that happens. Yeah.
I got raw in that episode. Yeah.
I loved it. It was great.
Well, this is perfect, and I have a Travis question to interrupt. Why doesn't Buffy consider Drusilla and Spike to be Angel's children?
Probably because she hasn't thought about it like that.
I don't think she's really into like the vampire lore and vampires yeah. making vampires. Like, she's not really interested in that side of it.
Prediction: Buffy will not have children. Seems obvious, but she ain't having kids. She just said she doesn't.
All right.
She's not happening.
All right, write it down, Mike. Write it down.
Okay, I'm writing it down.
All right. Mike's muted, and I don't know what the next question
okay,
is.
Okay, no, I'm sorry. I literally wrote down, Buffy will not have children. Travis asks, when was the last time you went to the mall? I can't be sure, but my guess is that the mall featured in the show is the Sherman Oaks Galleria. Probably is.
Yeah.
Good investigation. I go to the mall fairly often, actually, because there's a Whole Foods that's connected to a mall across the street from my work, so I eat there for lunch a couple times a week, probably.
I was in the mall like a month ago.
And also, when my brother was homeless, I would go to a mall that had a Starbucks that he would hang out in and try to find him. So
I went to
I'm
the
a
mall
fairly frequent mauler.
I biked to the mall today to go to H&M.
Did you?
So I'm nice. All over it.
Yeah, I was at Athleta. I love that store. But you got to go to a mall to get there. I guess there's one downtown, but I don't go downtown.
Travis asks, how do you like your eggs, bro?
I've just seen this episode. Zero liking of eggs.
I like them over easy with toast and bacon.
Yeah, I had scrambled eggs this morning Ooh. On toast. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So the stupid Polly question. It's probably my only thing I wrote in this episode, which is silly. But are you supposed to wear flannels that are two sizes too big? Because that's the fashion I'm noticing. It's just like you wear an extra large flannel on a medium sized
body.
And like,
yeah, that was like big in 95.
All right. Question asked, question answered.
Yes. The answer is yes.
But where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Ohio or Florida? I can't remember.
I grew up in Ohio, but I went to, you know, I lived in Florida for almost 10 years, but.
Right. Was there winter in Ohio? I don't really know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't confirm.
Okay. Winter. All right. I don't know. Because it's actually surprising in California that they would wear big, heavy flannels.
We just copied the styles of the West Coast, but like poorly in like a weird Ohio way. Yeah. So it's like, it's there. We saw it in magazines. People from California probably eventually lived in Ohio for reasons unknown. So like you just, the styles are all reinvented in Ohio. So like,
okay.
It exists, but it's just weird.
I have so much flannel because I lived in Vermont for like 7 years and I still wear it. And I live in California now and it's never appropriate and I'm always too hot, but like, I love my flannel. I'm not going to change it. I don't know. I'm just going to suffer through life. And I'm always going to feel like I should have been a grunge kid.
Yeah.
Well, now we live in this kind of grunge area, or at least Mary and I live in Portland, like, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, where like grunge is, was a huge thing, a huge cultural thing, I guess the West Coast generally. And, like,
yeah. It was pretty big in Montana. I mean, we were just close enough to Seattle that grunge was pretty on point.
Was there a lot of road trips to Seattle?
Well, I was in, I would say, 7th and 8th grade when that really hit. I would borrow my brother's Pearl Jam shirt and flannel if I really wanted to look cool in 8th grade.
Nice. I remember kids, because I went to middle school in New Orleans, and I remember, like, kids doing the flannel grunge thing there.
That must have been tasty.
Like, I mean, there was no way that was a natural look. The thing about grunge is it's supposed to be like this natural look, right? But if you're like,
yeah,
I'm grunge, but you're like dying.
But I'm sweating. Like, super uncomfortable.
Yeah, I remember like I got called out for my Air Jordans as a kid because I didn't play basketball. I totally should have been like, why are you wearing flannel?
Yeah.
We don't live on the West Coast or in a band or are poor or whatever the... I don't know.
I don't know.
You don't play bass. Exactly.
You don't
play bass. Oh, that's exactly it. Why are you wearing flannel? You don't play bass.
You don't play bass.
So knife is so deep when you say that. So Dennis, you said, how do you think the possession works? So you talked about this earlier. They seem to still have their mm-hmm. memories and personality up to a point and then become drones later on.
Yeah. I don't know how the mechanics of it work. Partially this isn't an exposition heavy episode. So we don't really know how the bizarre like works, but it's totally disturbing. It's more disturbing to me, the idea of being possessed and like still being yourself, except like you then betray your friends instead of like being just a full on drone and losing everything. Like, because then, like, I don't know, what's the line then of what's really you and what's this other part of you? What's this thing inside you that's really controlling your actions? That's good, creepy area to explore.
Yeah, that's like the big high school conundrum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor.
There's a version of this that's like totally Get Out level crazy, but it just doesn't get there because they don't play how scary that is very well. Mm-hmm. Like how that like initial, like, you know, you're you, but you're under a different, you're under a spell or you're like possessed. Like they don't play that. Cause like that moment when the creature is reaching for Buffy, like into her nostrils and stuff, like that's super creepy and needs to
be super creepy.
Like that's what's happened to everybody, right? That happened and they didn't see it or fight it. And like, they need to show, if they showed a little bit of that.
Actually gone inside and let.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if you listen to like Science Friday or something, but every now and then they'll talk about like parasites possessing like, you know, ants or something, or like how even like the bacteria cultures in human bodies can like, change the way like we think, like our attitudes are like, feelings and stuff. And like that's how little like we think we like this idea of like whether you're a person divorced from your body or not, or like everything about you is just chemicals and stuff. You know, because like, yeah, you can have a whole different attitude based on like different like chemical compositions in your stomach, right? And that's pretty fucked up.
That is messed up.
Yeah, the Bazaar are probably the weirdest. It's one of the weirder monsters that we've had. And I feel like there's been some possession already. And I can't think of the episode we've had possession where people's personalities changed.
There was the one with the hyenas, right?
Hyenas.
Yep, the pack. Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, everybody changes a little bit. Like if it becomes sexual, like, you know, the robot kind of influences Willow, so she's a little bit possessed. You know, the praying mantis influences Xander, so he seems and acts a little bit possessed.
Yeah, no, I would consider that at least partial possession, influencing your thoughts and
actions. The first episode of the season where Buffy is like trying to push everybody away, and she kind of acts a little bit weird, as if possessed. You know, like I guess the way it like manifests, because we've seen so many times when people's personalities are like manipulated by or changed so much. We're like kind of used to seeing this kind of weirdness. So like this, it's not as strong as it could have been because we've seen it so many times already. This is like a typical Buffy thing where the influences of something are so strong. It's like one of the tropes. So Dennis, I think this last question here, let me check. Nope. where's Jenny Calendar? Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Where she at this episode?
Yeah, she doesn't show up at all, right?
Maybe she's locked herself in the computer lab, afraid of what she's seeing.
Maybe she always hides out during sex ed week because she doesn't want to get involved.
Yeah. Things get too intense during sex ed week.
Yeah, she and Giles still need to talk. But anyway, like, yeah. It's apparently resolved last episode, but they need to talk.
Yeah. Oh, I also like there's that Giles dialogue earlier on in the episode where he's going on about something, and then he like looks and he for the first time notices they all have eggs, and he's like, "Why do you all have eggs?"
Yeah.
So Travis asks, "Does anyone else feel really uncomfortable with how Xander hits Cordelia and knocks her out? Brutal."
Yep.
Yep. Totally.
Yeah, it's pretty uncool.
Yeah, there's a couple of weird Xander moments here. It's easy to hate Xander in this episode. Then Dennis, you say Buffy killing the Mother Bazaar, or however it's spelled, shuts down the little guys. And this is a guess about how the Bazaar works. A lot like how the Avengers beat the big boss at the end of the first Avengers. What would happen to Joss Whedon heroes if they ever faced a horde that could act autonomously?
They would fucking die. They're not prepared for it.
Yeah, like ditto in every video game. Like, where you need to kill the big boss and, like, it shuts out, you know, the other enemies just die suddenly. Like, yeah, you absolutely expect the leader to fall and then, you know, everything else falls in line. It's just like, if you were to try and take over a country, you're like, oh, I'll just take out the leader, correct? You know?
Right. But that's how we have insurgency for, like, 20 years. Because it doesn't actually shut down people.
Yeah. No, great point. But it's certainly easier for TV writing. Otherwise, it's like, this is what the rest of the season is about. Right?
Yeah, what if this show kept going, but every now and then they'd be like, somebody's acting a little weird. Check their back for Bazaars.
Yeah. We just need to frisk you for a Bazaar.
So I'm going to write this prediction in. Bazaars are not coming back. This is a one-time deal.
All right.
Write it down.
Okay. Yep. Bazaars. Not coming back. Also, yeah, a lot of negative predictions. Buffy not having kids. All right, so we're moving on to themes here. Travis says, this is the first time that Buffy honestly tells her mom saving the world from vampires. This isn't the breaking the fourth wall, but it is something else.
It's a gag.
Yeah, it's
sarcasm.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that this happens right after Ted, where she's like threatened to go to an insane asylum for this, like for believing this, and then the next episode she jokes about it.
Yeah, she has started now like that. She did that in Ted where she just tells the truth because no one's going to believe her anyway, in kind of like a monotone. She just kind of says it.
Yeah.
So I keep saying there's a lot of questions, and I don't mean to like make it sound like the episode is dragging. What I'm saying is, like, there's so many questions from people that didn't show up. So I kind of feel like I'm kind of like someone else did my homework in a way where it's like, hey, everything's been taken care of. Just read our prompts. It'll be fine. Like conversation prompts about this episode. It totally feels very, very much like this VR app I've been playing with called Alt Space. You guys played around with Alt Space VR? It's a Gear VR thing. Okay. It's all very new. But anyway, Alt Space, there's like these areas you go and you can socialize with people, and there's totally these conversation starters written like on the wall of these houses, these fake house parties you go to.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
But right, are the people you're talking to real people?
Yes.
That's and they're weird. Leaving the notes on the walls.
No, the notes are generated by the app.
Oh, okay.
So the app is like teaching you in a virtual space how to socialize for real.
It could be if you're super alienated, but it could also be like, hey, you don't know people. Here's a way to get started. I like your alienated perspective, though, Dennis, where you're like, hey, you don't know how to talk to people, obviously. You're in a virtual environment.
Yeah.
You're substituting.
It could be. I mean, that could totally be like a training program for people like on the spectrum or something, like socialize with cues in a safe space.
Yeah. It could become very therapeutic.
It could. Except
let's build our own virtual app with this pitch.
Yeah, it would have to be its own thing because AltSpace does let you boot people, and I got booted from someone's virtual hang zone.
What'd you do?
Were you being dirty?
Well, the virtual hang zone, when I was like going to join, it said there were 19 out of 20 people there, and it was public. And so I went in, and it sounds like someone just, like, it was a bunch of people around a fire watching Comedy Central. And like, they were like, hey, where's Cameron? Hey, where did Cameron go? Anybody see him? And I think it sounds like somebody's internet connection just like got weird, or their device overheated and they were booted. And I was like, hey, everybody, how are things? And they're like, oh, not Cameron. And then, like, and then it just said, like, I was gone.
Awkward. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you man. Have been removed from that event. And I'm like, okay.
That's weird. Wow.
Man, someday Cameron is going to show up. Someday Cameron is going to show up to Buffy Virgin instead of you. And it'll be revenge.
It's basically just the experience of walking into a room you don't belong to. Into.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time.
Which we have a simulation for. You were wondering, like, how do you simulate walking into a room where you don't belong? Oh, you just put on this VR headset and then join any crowded room.
And say hi.
Yeah, it's great. What's up? You don't even have to get to the conversation starters written on the wall. They'll be ignored.
That's good.
So Travis asks a creepy question. Why do we feel that we are doomed to repeat our parents' lives? By the way, I don't really feel this episode brings this up.
That's just a deep thought.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, I don't know exactly what that's connected to.
Does that mean that Buffy is like Joyce, or Joyce is like Buffy? Because they don't seem alike.
You know, I think it is because Buffy jokes about not having a partner and how she's a single mom, right? And so it's like, you know, this is pretty effed up. And like, that's a funny recognition. I think that Joss is really good at recognizing those things.
Yeah.
Where those kind of family things. So like, that's pretty true. Like, I think if I were like, man, I'm not in a position to repeat my parents' lives. I've like worked so hard to not repeat my parents' lives that like, I don't see that happening right now. I don't feel doomed at the moment, but I also like have actively worked to not repeat the decisions my parents have made.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
So you fought the sense of doom you maybe felt. I don't know.
No, I guess I felt the doom sense, but I'm like, no, don't go through those doors.
That is not my destiny.
Maybe Joyce, like in a different life, was real feisty. I mean, it's probably in their blood, right? Maybe if things had happened differently, Joyce would have been the Slayer. And we just can't
another
even.
Another time, another place.
Yeah. Wow. That would have been when Nicolas Cage jumped in. When Joyce was the Slayer. Oh, that's a great.
Joyce, you need some training. I don't know how to tell you this. It's going to be weird. It's really weird.
I love it.
But you have a lot of responsibilities that I can't explain to you as Nicolas Cage. Joyce!
That's a really good impression. Wow.
Thanks. Woo. I only do impressions once. I don't practice. Yeah. I just do them one time.
No, it's perfect. You never have to do it again. I've locked it. It's in my head.
John says, the first act toys with anti-sex responsibility lessons, but it doesn't come through.
I feel like he's misinterpreting what is going on in the first act. I don't think it's anti-sex. I think it's just about other stuff.
Well, it's about sexual responsibility, about consequences for sex, right? Like, the consequence is teen pregnancy. And this is kind of the teen pregnancy episode, but like, it's the Bezoar metaphor is so weird that it doesn't hit very strongly. Like, teen pregnancy. Okay, so check this.
But
oh, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, but the thing, they're more like, there's the teen pregnancy bit at the beginning, but once people get possessed, they're more the newborns to the Bezoar. It's about the Bezoar's motherhood more than like, you know, Willow's motherhood.
So that wasn't exactly where I was going to take it, but yes, it totally is. Like, my thought was that if it was about teen pregnancy, it would have done something differently to them. They would have felt obliged to take care of this weird monster or something, but instead, like, they just get possessed. It's very simple. But if they were, like, gave birth to a monster that they then felt obligated to take care of, that would be, like, the weird, super obvious teen pregnancy thing.
Yeah, totally.
Also,
that's a whole different episode.
That would have been a good episode.
Also, if they were, it was all extremely pleasurable for a minute, like some extreme pleasure, followed by them now feeling they had to take care of it, would have been great. It would have been great Xander moment, like, oh, little guy, you look just like me. And it's like, doesn't look like him.
And he like loves it and can't explain
it. Isn't he beautiful?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, ah.
But it would totally be like a Tamagotchi-like thing that they have to take care of, it's just like totally wasteoid of all their time and energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a great episode, Michael.
Yeah, it's just, let's just rewrite this one episode of Buffy.
I was okay with that.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna break the timeline a little, because there actually is a similar Angel episode to this, to what you're describing. And Travis would probably be pretty upset with me for even mentioning it, but there's a demonic pregnancy.
And it becomes a Tamagotchi episode, is what you're saying?
I won't say what happens with the demonic pregnancy, but...
All right.
Motherhood changes people.
All right, prediction. Yeah, more demonic pregnancy. and then Travis says, every main character has turned evil except Buffy and Angel so far. He says, Xander, the pack, this episode with Cordelia, Willow, Giles... Excuse me, Jonathan. I don't know why he mentions Jonathan.
He's an important character.
You guys just love this weirdo. And then there's Joyce, whose body snatch possessed, and Jenny was possessed in the Dark Ages. Okay, mm-hmm. Just observation. And then Dennis, you said, the main theme seems about motherhood, the mother-daughter relationship. They're mostly examples of bad parenting, or is it? Do you think Joyce's 180 parenting style in this episode is supposed to be connected to the events of Ted? Tell me more about this 180 thing first before we...
This episode begins with Joyce being really harsh on Buffy. And I just think she constantly throughout this episode overreacts to Buffy, like way outside the context of what she's doing. Like, she grounds Buffy for making a phone call in the middle of the night and being dressed up. But like, there's... The truth is she'd already come in. But like, I just think it's like, considering how lax a parent she's been in other episodes and stuff, it seems like my first reading is like she was just written totally like a totally different character this episode. But then a larger reading could be like she's still reacting to the events of Ted and is still upset with Buffy, like emotionally about like that murder, and is like trying to punish her for that. And so is finding other reasons.
For me, watching these back to back, I did feel a little bit of that, but I felt like something had to happen because of Buffy killing Ted, and that like the emotional residue from that being so great that like it did feel like Joyce was responding to that with some of her like surprising criticism of Buffy, like Buffy, go get my outfit from the cleaners or whatever, like in the intro, where you're like, what the hell is going on? Just go get it. Like, I don't understand. Just some weird mom stuff happening there that felt like she's still mad, even though apparently it was resolved. It didn't feel resolved, though.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks it's just not consistent writing.
Yeah, that's... Because
they can't
seem
to figure out who Joyce is yet.
Yeah, I think that's, like, really what's going on. But, like, trying to make more of a connection than is really there.
But what's
and
great
it does
is
make
this-
sense.
This teaches you how much you can get away with as a supernatural writer. You know, you can just like keep playing with the characters. As long as these monsters keep coming back, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's good learning for me.
Good mom, bad mom, passive mom, doesn't talk about deep stuff mom. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
She's
who cares?
All over the place.
She can keep changing.
But her hair stays the same.
So we're going to get into predictions here. So I've already made my predictions during this episode, which is great. I've predicted that Buffy is not going to have kids. That seems huge, but it doesn't seem like a show that's going to resolve that. So no children for Buffy. Also, the Bazaars are not coming back. Those are my only two predictions, but I now need through the things that might have happened. And this is where John has the expertise, and I actually don't know. So if we can walk through some of these, that'd be great. So
all right, do you
want
to scan those and I can give the kill count while you scan?
Please.
So I counted no dead humans, one dead vampire, and I actually did a lot of pausing and stuff to count possessed people because of the Bazaars, I think 20 died this episode. That's counting the Mother Bazaar and Xander's boiled Bazaar. And then, like, the people with Bazaars on their back. So I think 20 dead demons is a lot. That's what I got for kill count.
A lot
the
of kills.
The teacher doesn't die? I thought the teacher doesn't show up again, so I assumed he was
He was. I think he was in the horde. I think he was
in there somewhere.
The drones.
Okay.
Yeah. And I thought maybe the security guard died, but he's in the horde also.
Okay.
So he was just...
They kill the mother and they are all better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, double confirmed Cordy Xander will make out again. This doesn't count as a Jonathan-focused episode.
The one Jonathan's seen.
Yeah, I don't see any new things confirmed. Was there one that John mentioned that was like going to be the thing?
He did. I don't remember what it was, but I remember him saying that.
Well, we can't... Sorry, John, we couldn't learn whatever you said last episode because we didn't re-listen to it in the time frame since it came out today, perhaps. So, Dennis, what are your recommendations?
All right. I have three recommendations, and I'm recommending three that are all, like, my favorite. So I'm recommending Brain Damage from 88, which is a Frank Henneloffer movie. He also did Frankenhooker, which I recommended earlier this season. It's, like, an alien possession movie that, like, goes to really gross places and stuff and is, like, can you guys hear my dog crying? She's obsessed with tennis balls right now. It goes to really gross places, and it's like a fun movie. And then I'm also going to recommend a David Cronenberg double feature of The Brood and Shivers. Have any of you guys seen either of those?
You know, I haven't. I've mostly explored, Videodrome and Scanners. I mean, when I think of Cronenberg and The Fly.
Yeah. So those are, like, I think The Brood and Shivers are maybe... like that and Rabid are maybe like my favorite Cronenberg movies. So The Brood is from 79 and Shivers is from 75. The Brood I recommend because it's about motherhood. It's like a very gross motherhood tale. And we don't see eggs in it, but we do see some gross hatchlings. And to spoil a little bit of the movie, the hatchlings do have chicken mouths. They do have chicken beaks.
Yeah.
But they, other than that, look like children. And then Shivers is this great other possession, physical possession movie where this like slimy thing gets inside people's bodies and they become zombies. And it all takes place inside this one like apartment complex, but they're not regular zombies. They're like sex zombies. So like the main characters the entire time are trying to avoid terrifying monstrous orgies. So it's like totally really solid movie. Those are my recs. I'm really pumped about being able to recommend them on Buffy.
Those are great. I want to check those out. I'm going to try to do, I think, like a just a binge of all the Dennis recommendations to see what happens to me.
That's a whole nother podcast.
I'm going to just like, it'll be a private podcast. It'll be called Dennis Binge. And Dennis won't be on it.
No.
me watching all these things that he recommends.
That's good.
No, I clearly Dennis should be on it, but anyway.
No, and we need somebody because you have actually fairly similar taste to mine. We need somebody who would be like totally grossed out by all of the like recommendations. Like, why are you putting me through this?
Yeah, we need a Cordelia person that doesn't want to watch anything. You know, my wife would be great at this because she doesn't like horror movies. Wow, I'm going to talk to her about this in 1 minute. When this podcast ends, I'm going to ask her.
That's a good idea.
That'd be fun.
That'd be nice.
Well, don't forget to buy your comics at denniscomics.com. Follow us at BuffyVirginPod, BuffyVirgin.com. Like us on Facebook.
And rate us on iTunes.
Please rate us on iTunes. That stuff's important for the iTunes search engine machine. And maybe if it gets high enough, we'll end up in some catalog of Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcasts. I think we're getting better at this and we'd appreciate that. So yeah. Thanks again for everybody coming out. Mary, it's been great to see you. Dennis, this was awesome.
Yeah, thanks guys.
Yeah, we'll see you in a few weeks.